Welcome to Hub Headlines. Today's program features the best commentary and analysis published in the Hub for March 28. Up first is Mike Moffat and Kara Stern writing on what Australia can teach Canada about getting homes built.
As much debate as there is on demand-side solutions to the housing crisis, on the supply side, it's pretty clear. We just need to build a lot more homes. If there was a good enough supply of homes for everyone who wanted one, to own or rent, housing would naturally be affordable. But you can't build 5.8 million homes in the next 6 years, as Canada Mortgage and Housing Corporation says we need to do, without adding infrastructure to service all those homes and those people. Premiers and mayors alike have asked the federal government for more money to support this growing population. Specifically, Premier Doug Ford of Ontario has called on the federal government to provide more funding for transportation infrastructure, and the Federation of Canadian Municipalities has called on the federal government to establish a new dedicated water and wastewater fund. Noting the lack of this infrastructure is slowing housing development. The federal government should use this request as an opportunity to strengthen home building incentives for municipalities by creating a fund that would pay municipalities $10,000 for each housing start. There would be some who'd argue that direct federal funding to municipalities to influence their housing policies represents a case of federal overreach. It's not the role or responsibility of the national government to dictate local land use rules. But that constitutional debate has been effectively superseded by politics. Both the federal Liberals and Conservatives now include municipal incentives in their housing policies. The Trudeau government's Housing Accelerator Fund has driven substantial reforms at the municipal level in exchange for federal funding, reducing red tape and allowing for more as-of-right construction. While provincial parties in Ontario debate the merits of allowing fourplexes as-of-right, the accelerator requires it of larger cities. It has worked to change zoning rules in many cities, though some, such as Windsor, have refused to sign on, forgoing tens of millions of dollars of federal funding. While these zoning reforms are helpful, they won't do enough on their own. The Ontario and British Columbia governments, along with Pierre Poilievre through Bill C-356, have recognized that municipalities can always find creative ways to block new housing. Creating incentives based on actual results will stop that from happening. The federal Liberals would do well to take a page out of the conservative playbooks of Poilievre and Ford and introduce outcome-based housing incentives to municipalities in addition to their incentives through the Housing Accelerator. However, the Liberals should also recognize that both the Poilievre and Ford approaches suffer from some design flaws that should be addressed. The targets in each, particularly Poilievre's Bill C-356, are completely arbitrary and will be trivially easy for some municipalities to hit and nearly impossible for others, limiting their effectiveness as incentives. As well, the incentives in Bill C-356 only apply to a handful of cities and leave out many cities with chronic housing shortages and growing unaffordability, such as Waterloo, Edmonton, Burlington, and most of the 905. Finally, in both approaches, it is difficult to estimate how much any one decision affects the amount of money a municipality will receive. Incentives only work if they are understood. The federal government should design a new infrastructure funding system based on the best of the Poilievre and Ford approaches while correcting for their design flaws. The Federation of Canadian Municipalities has called on the federal government to provide an additional $2 billion per year in infrastructure funding in their Budget 2024 submission, which provides a target budget for the federal government to achieve with their new plan. This is an opportunity for the federal government to create a program, inspired by one used in Australia, to require cities to sign on to the Housing Accelerator, along with other pro-housing policies of the federal government's choosing, such as eliminating parking minimums, allowing homes from the design catalog to be built as of right, and increased density on transit lines. Any municipality that did so would receive a flat per unit sum of $10,000 for every housing start. Given that Canada has 200,000 and 250,000 housing starts per year, and not every municipality would sign a board, this $10,000 figure would keep the total budget at, or below, $2 billion. The $10,000 per housing start figure could be adjusted if the federal government were willing to put more, or less, money into the program. This is a win-win plan, as it not only provides communities with the infrastructure they need to build more homes, but also creates easily understandable funding that does not rely on arbitrary targets. It would also potentially cover every community in Canada. It would also create a clear cost to the opposition of new housing construction. When a city councillor suggests, say, removing 38 units from a project, housing supply proponents would be able to point out the loss of $380,000 of federal funding such a move would cause. Mike's hometown of London is raising $70,000 for a new playground. It would be an incredibly powerful argument for local YIMBYs to point out that by council removing just 7 units from a planning application, we are losing the funding that could be used to fully fund the new kindergarten playground for John Dearness Public School. We cannot meet our housing ambitions without more infrastructure. Let's hope that in Budget 2024, the federal government recognizes the opportunity they have been given with this funding request and creates a well-designed, outcomes-based infrastructure plan.
That was a commentary by Mike Moffat and Kara Stern. Mike Moffat and Kara Stern are co-hosts of the podcast The Missing Middle, where they discuss the topics that have led to a declining middle class and how to reverse that trend. You can find the full text of their article on our website, thehub.ca.
Hi, Hub Podcast listener. Fun fact to share with you. Well, not really. Thanks to growing government intervention into the news media, the next federal election will be covered mostly by journalists whose salaries will be majority funded by one form of public subsidy or another. Yes, you heard me right. Here at The Hub, we think this is bad for journalism and bad for news and information consumers like you. And this is why The Hub will not be availing itself of these government subsidies. But producing high-quality independent news and analysis is expensive and time-consuming. And this is why we are asking you now to become a Hub subscriber for as little as 25 cents a day. Get all kinds of great benefits, including subscriber-only analysis of the economy and politics, podcast content, and so much more, all with the knowledge that your support makes our independent journalism possible. Sign up now at thehub.ca.
Our second essay is by Paul Kershaw, writing on why Doug Ford's disastrous budget further burdens younger Ontarians.
All the bragging about gas tax relief in Ontario's 2024 budget should make us laugh if it weren't so sad. By the government's own numbers, that tax cut saves about $10 per month for the typical household. There are real affordability problems in Ontario, including the budget's forecast that average home prices will rise again. With property values increasing, there's little hope that rents will drop. So, $10 per month in gas tax relief is just a noisy distraction. The real fiscal signal in the 2024 budget is that the Ford government has a serious revenue problem, despite investing little to reduce unaffordability pressures. Provincial plans to restore a balanced budget by means of spending restraint and revenue from future economic growth are on shaky ground. Younger voters inherit more debt, but little help with major costs of living like post-secondary and housing. Here's why that is a bad generational deal. Ontario tabled a $9.8 billion deficit this year when just a year ago it forecasted a $0.2 billion surplus. This $10 billion slide into deficit occurred despite Budget 2024 committing little in new spending. The most noteworthy spending increase is interest payments on provincial debt, up $1.1 billion compared to 2023. Interest payments grew twice as much as increased spending on medical care, and about twice the increase for kindergarten to grade 12 education. They grew three times more than spending on $10 a day child care, with new child care money coming primarily from Ottawa, and four times faster than operating spending for housing. Interest payments rose significantly despite a $400 million cut to post-secondary spending. When controlling for the number of younger residents, Ontario now spends about half of what BC and Alberta invest in post-secondary. Given how little new money Budget 2024 invests, there is minimal hope that spending restraint alone is a viable pathway to restore balanced budgets. Nor should we be optimistic that future economic growth can deliver the necessary revenue. Ontario enjoyed a 4.1% increase in GDP in 2023, higher than the 2.8% it predicted a year ago. Despite this robust growth, the province's deficit ballooned compared to last year's expectations. Since Budget 2024 downgrades growth projections for the next 3 years, there are serious questions about revenue resiliency if Ontario plans to rely primarily on GDP increases to generate the funds needed to pay for existing provincial services. As the path to balanced budgets looks uncertain, and the government seems unwilling to talk about new revenue from taxes, younger Canadians are picking up the tab for unpaid bills. When this year's $9.8 billion deficit is spread across all Ontarians under age 45, because younger residents disproportionately bear the burden of paying for deficits, each incurs an added bill of over $1,000. By contrast, the 2024 budget adds less than $200 in new money for medical care, education, and social services for each person under 45. That's not a good trade-off. Young people take on more public debt even as the province forecasts that housing affordability will worsen. Budget 2024 predicts that average home prices will rise by 7% over the next 3 years, adding another $60,000 to the $872,000 average Ontario home value in 2023. To restore affordability for all, we need home prices to stall, so there is even half a chance for earnings to catch up and for pressures on rents to subside. Sadly, Budget 2024 predicts the opposite, that home prices will rise by twice the rate of inflation as of 2026. One reason for this is that Ontario is failing to deliver a strong housing plan. A comparison with BC is helpful. Both provinces will spend $2 billion this year in operating funds to reduce housing unaffordability. But BC's investment will be spread across a population just one-third the size of Ontario's. Both provinces have similar schemes to discourage foreign buyers. But BC is ahead of Ontario on taxing empty homes, discouraging speculation, taxing home flipping, and regulating short-term rentals. BC is also pressuring municipalities to adapt zoning to increase density, making fourplexes permissible when previously just duplexes and single detached homes were allowed. Premier Ford resists this idea, putting him among the housing gatekeepers against which his federal counterpart, Mr. Poilievre, rails. The bottom line is that Ontario's 2024 budget piles more debt on younger residents, invests less in post-secondary than other provinces, rides federal coattails to improve child care, concedes it can't contain home prices, and does all this while celebrating the decision to subsidize people burning fossil fuels as climate change rages on. That's a weak legacy to leave for younger residents and future generations.
That was a commentary by Paul Kershaw. He is a policy professor at UBC and the founder of Generation Squeeze, Canada's leading voice for generational fairness. That's it for today's edition of Hub Headlines. We hope you enjoyed the program. To receive all our best commentary and analysis each morning by email, subscribe to The Hub for as little as 25 cents a day. You can do that right now at thehub.ca. Hub Headlines is produced by Alicia Rao. Thanks for listening.